Welcome to the Foresight Health Roundup podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Burda, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Thursday, April 24th. Today is Holocaust Remembrance Day, and you thought we were done with sending people to concentration camps. So did the greatest generation who fought and died for our freedom, but this time it's us, and we're using planes instead of trains. Another thing you may thought we were done with is rising maternal mortality rates. You'd also be wrong. A study by researchers from the National Institutes of Health documented an alarming trend. NIH published the study in JAMA Network Open earlier this month. It said the number of pregnancy-related deaths increased from 25.3 per 100,000 live births in 2018 to 32.6 per 100 live births in 2022. That's a 29% increase in the maternal mortality rate in just 5 years. The study also found wide variations in pregnancy-related death rates by state, age, race, and ethnicity. For example, over the five-year study period, the aggregate maternal mortality rate was the highest in Alabama at 59.7 per 100,000 live births, compared with the lowest, 18.5 in California, and the highest for American Indian and Alaska Native women at 106.3 per 100,000 live births, compared with the lowest, 21.8 for non-Hispanic Asian women. The prospects of these trends turning around are slim. Maternal health advocates are warning that pending massive cuts to state Medicaid programs will disproportionately affect pregnant Black women. And we may never know to what extent, because the Trump regime fired the CDC staff in charge of the Pregnancy Risk Assessment Monitoring System that tracks maternal mortality. Now, I hate to say we told you so, but we did tell you so in our August 1st, 2024 podcast, Maternal Mortality, Infant Mortality, and Women's Health. So please listen to a rebroadcast of that podcast, as we did have some ideas on how to navigate around this pending and all too predictable crisis. We're going to talk about women's health in the context of three new reports. The first from the Commonwealth Fund on maternal mortality, the second from the CDC on infant mortality, and the third from the Commonwealth Fund on a state-by-state scorecard on women's health. I'm going to give you the top-line findings of each, and then I'll ask you for your takeaways. The first report from the Commonwealth Fund said the U.S. had the highest maternal mortality rate of any high-income nation in 2022 at 22.3 deaths per 100,000 live births. The lowest was Norway at 0. Second lowest was Switzerland at 1.2. Also, 65% of the U.S. deaths happened one day and up to a year after delivery, and the U.S. had the second lowest supply of OBGYNs and midwives at 16 per 1,000 live births. The lowest was Canada at 13. The report from the CDC said the infant mortality rate in the U.S. rose to 5.61 deaths per 1,000 live births in 2022. That's up from 5.44 in 2021 and 5.42 in 2020. It's the second consecutive year that the rate went up. Also, the infant mortality rate was the highest for Black women at 10.9 in 2022. It was less than half for white women at 4.52. The rate was the lowest for Asian women at 3.51. The second report from the Commonwealth Fund said the five best states for health system performance for women in 2022 were Massachusetts, Vermont, Rhode Island, Connecticut, and New Hampshire. The five worst states for women's health in 2022 were Mississippi, Texas, Nevada, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. The Commonwealth Fund used 32 measures in four domains: access, affordability, quality of care and health outcomes to rank the states. Now let's ask our experts to tell us what it all means. Dave, what's your overall takeaway from these reports? Did one specific stat jump out at you? And from a policy perspective, what would you do to point the U.S. in the right direction on women's health?
There's a quote from Hubert Humphrey that I've always found very powerful. Hubert Humphrey, the former senator from Minnesota and vice president under Lyndon Johnson. And the quote is, "The moral test of government is how it treats those at the dawn of life, children, the twilight of life, elderly, and the shadows of life, the sick, needy, and handicapped." Honestly, Dave, it's hard to read these reports and not conclude that American society today just fundamentally fails to meet this moral test. There's nothing new or surprising in these dismal results. We've become inured to the on-the-ground reality and human impact of the statistics they chronicle. And just to try to put the right perspective on this, of all that's wrong in U.S. healthcare, and we all know that's a lot, the system's inability to take care of babies, mothers, and children's is far and away its single biggest failure. It's just unacceptable. Yet, where's the moral outrage? Why do we tolerate such dismal results? And until America can answer and act on these questions, I believe we're doomed to continue being a significant outlier among high-income countries as it pertains to maternal health, maternal mortality, infant mortality, infant health, childhood health. It's just shameful. You asked for one statistic. I'm going to give you two. They're both from the Commonwealth Fund study. The first is that 8 million American women of reproductive age don't have health insurance. Let that one sort of sink in for a second. And more broadly, just over a quarter, only a quarter of Americans have access to paid family leave through their employers or through the state they live in. Clearly, caring for mothers and babies and children isn't a priority in these United States of America. So if you want to talk about policies, I mean, this isn't rocket science. We need to improve access. We need to expand family leave. We need to guarantee that everyone has access to really basic primary care services. I've been an advocate for a while of something I call universal 4P. We should just pay for it. It will generate an enormous return to society. But the 4Ps are primary care, prenatal care, postnatal care, and palliative care. I can tell you without another massive study from one of the foundations that if we as a society invest significantly in these areas and make these types of basic care available to everyone who lives here, our statistics will improve. So here's where I'm going to conclude. So we've got a monumental demographic challenge in this country. By the year 2030, so 6 years from now, we will have more people over age 65 than under age 18. So we're an increasingly aging society. That has a double-barreled impact as when it comes to healthcare. First, healthcare expenses increase as people age. So we got to figure out how to accommodate the natural aging of the population and provide adequate care. But the other thing is we're going to have fewer workers to pick up that care burden and pay for that care burden. And in America today, Medicaid pays for almost 50% of births in the country. And even if people don't care about equity, and of course they should care about it passionately. We're talking about our future workforce. So 50%, just let that sink in for a second. We're talking about a future workforce where we don't fund in anywhere near adequate fashion maternal and childhood care. And these are going to be the people 15, 20, 30 years from now that we're going to be depending on to keep the country up and running. So let me just end with this observation. Unleashing human potential has the highest return of any investment that companies and or societies can make. And there would be no higher return to the United States of America, bar none, than investing expansively in maternal and child care. We just need to do it.
Yeah, basic economics, right? Thanks, Dave. Excellent assessment. Julie, any questions for Dave?
Dave, you know, you and I agree probably on every point along the way here, but when I looked at the data, this data, 2022, I had to ask myself, is this really COVID-driven? Because these numbers have been going down since COVID hit. Do you think these 2022 numbers are materially off because of COVID, or do you suspect that we're in a downward trend and we'll see this, you know, same behavior in 23 and 24?
I get where you're going. I wish we could blame COVID for the decline, but it was still around in 2022, but it was far less virulent than it was in 2020 and 2021. So unfortunately, my conclusion, it's not based on, you know, deep research, but my conclusion is that COVID hasn't really affected these statistics for 2022 in a material way. The reason they're going down, our statistics are going down, relate to inadequate access, issues relating to race and structural racism, lack of insurance coverage, really basic building blocks of societal health. Even high-income Black women who present in hospitals with great insurance and everything else going for them don't get the same attention that other women receive, white women, Asian women, so on. So that's a problem. That's a real problem. And until we kind of come to terms with that, Julie, I don't really think we're going to see these numbers move a whole lot.
Thanks, Dave. Julie, it's your turn. What's your big takeaway from the reports? Did one specific stat make you spit out your coffee? And from an innovation perspective, what do you see happening in the market to reverse some of these alarming numbers?
Sadly, having spent 2 days with a diverse, highly experienced, amazingly creative group of industry leaders focused on health equity, none of this data surprises me. And unfortunately, so much of it comes down to trust. Shout out to Jeff Berger here. I said the T word. You know, the relationship seen among the data, from Medicaid expansion, race and ethnicity, Roe v. Wade impact, workforce differentiation. It's literally like a perfect storm to me as I look at all this together. And the finding that caused me the most pause was really about the workforce. The data found that in most high-income countries, midwives far outnumber OBGYNs. But the US, Canada, and Korea were the only countries where OBGYNs outnumbered midwives, and with the lowest total supply of providers, 16 midwives and 13 OBGYNs for every 1,000 births. So these health equity conversations I participated in last week, and big thanks to Edmonda Robinson for bringing together health equity and digital leaders from health systems, health plans, the innovator community, and shout out, by the way, to Cam Matthews from CityBlock, incredible thought leader and listener. She's making it happen. You know, I thought I knew a lot from years of working in community health, health centers and public hospitals and philanthropy in this area, but I was beyond humbled and educated last week, to be honest, because these discussions really focused on the critical role of doulas and midwives in maternal and infant mortality, or really, to put a positive spin on it, we talked about it, that's the obvious goal, maternal infant health. And doulas and midwives, you know, it's just a different experience. They come to your home to provide care. They create a deeper relationship over time, and they are a trusted resource in the community, and in many cases share similar racial and ethnic background and experience. And all of this has been proven to build trust. And if you think about our workforce is literally upside down. So, you know, if we don't have trust in the traditional Western medicine workforce, then these issues are headed in a bad direction, which is why I asked you the question, Dave. The good news for me, I guess partially good news, is that maternity care is seeing a wave of innovation. They are, you know, transforming care delivery and payment models and rethinking how to really build models with outcomes for what BabyScripts calls an under-resourced maternity population. There are many other kind of wraparound innovators wrapping around the traditional system, trying to just provide a virtual kind of coaching care model all the way along to support companies like Pomelo doing this focused in Medicaid. Delfina has an AI spin on their model. Mirani, which I think is how you pronounce it, also has an AI spin. Kayaba is a maternity navigator. And if you look on the website of all these companies, they all have BIPOC mothers and couples. So they're all looking at the population that we're talking about that's affected here. There are other broader models. Diana Health, Quilted Health has been focused on midwives specifically, Poppy Seed, kind of looking at the full spectrum of the experience. You know, there's been a lot of extremely thoughtful innovation in the space, and there's some serious hills to climb here. I mean, reaching these target populations is challenging. The workforce supply, I noted earlier, might be one of the biggest issues, not just whether or not the workforce exists, but how that workforce can be organized in a way to actually provide a different kind of care model. You know, it's not a small task. And by the way, health plans. Health plans are used to contracting with OBGYNs. To get a health plan to really recognize the role of doulas and midwives and to pay for it, it's happening, but this is a brand new concept in many geographies. So, you know, this is a part of the industry that is not well served because it's not because, but partially because there's a lack of organization reimbursement. And these models, all these models I just talked about, they need to grow. And we need to add on to them, extend them before and after birth to make sure that maternal care is strong and solid, and to make sure that the mother and the child and perhaps the broader family is really healthy and well supported afterwards. And it can be done if we just get out of our silos and build some trust.
Dave, any questions for Julie?
Well, Julie, I mean, just great analysis. And I'm really glad you focused on midwives and doulas. I'm going to give you a softball here, Julie. According to the Commonwealth Fund study, states with abortion restrictions tend to have the fewest number of maternity care providers. And I didn't even know you were going to focus on that, but just shows how much in sync we are. These states also tend to have higher levels of maternal and infant mortality. The science of statistics warns that correlation isn't always causation, but often it is. So the question is it here? And if it is, what are the implications for health outcomes among women and children of the recent Supreme Court decision overturning Roe and granting states more autonomy to restrict abortion access?
Yeah. You know, similar to my question to you about COVID, I would love to think that we're just in a phase, but given workforce and all these other issues, I think so much of this is so systemic. There's just so many people who don't have the levers. So I worry about this workforce and, you know, people can't just pick up and move necessarily. It's a problem.
You know, the health of women and children is the future of the country, as you guys have argued. I think that's true. Some people want to take that away, right? Others want to preserve and improve it. So, okay, this is Dave again, and it's still Thursday, April 24th. Thanks for listening to a rebroadcast of our August 1st, 2024 podcast, Maternal Mortality, Infant Mortality, and Women's Health. Clearly, we're going to have to rely on market-driven private sector innovation to reverse this growing crisis in maternal health. That is all we have time for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can subscribe to The Roundup on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.